I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
So you mentioned White Lotus a few weeks ago in relation to Beverly Hills.
Right. The women not really knowing anything about their husband's finances. And yeah, there was a scene in White Lotus that reminded me of it. Have you started watching?
Well, so finally, Danny started it while I was out of town. And he was like, all right, well, when you get back, I want to catch up, you to catch up, and we'll watch it together going forward. So I am fully caught up. I don't know if our listeners are watching, but it's great. Jennifer Coolidge, is she Sonia Morgan?
That's funny because she's just very, you know, you're right, especially this season.
Yeah.
I mean, Sonia's always sort of been emotionally all over the place, but Jennifer Coolidge, like for those watching, she's just becoming a little, well, I don't know, maybe she has been the whole time. She's being more honest about it.
Yes.
I mean, this isn't a spoiler. I can't tell if I thought it was funny or just like amazing that she was talking to some guy and she said, the core of me is I am a needy person.
Yeah.
And what was it?
Alcoholic, psychopath.
I'm a needy person and I am severely insecure.
Yes.
And I was just like, wow, it could be me talking.
I know. And that's the thing. Oftentimes when you watch a TV show, you do see little bits of yourself in the different characters.
Right.
And I think White Lotus does a good job of that. But you're right when you talk about this season of Sonia and everything she's going through, her eccentricities, her insecurities, her... the whole thing, it just reminds me so much of Jennifer Coolidge's character. And not to say that Jennifer is basing it on anyone or anything like that. I think she is really doing a phenomenal job acting. And I hope she gets some accolades for that. But just in the last couple episodes, I was like, wow, this is reminding me of our girl Sonia.
Yeah.
So everyone check it out. I mean,
please.
Why not?
And also reveal your core early on
is
the message of that.
That is the message. Yeah. Just show it all.
Yeah.
Show it all right from the beginning. First date. Tell them exactly what's going on. What else is going on in Bravo news? Pandora, Lisa Vanderpump's daughter, is pregnant.
Yes, it's very exciting for me right now because Andrew had never watched Vanderpump Rules.
Oh, right.
So we're in season 4 right now. And it's just nice to me because it's, you know, Jason and Pandy have been married a while. And so it's exciting, you know, that, wow, she's pregnant.
I know. And I'm more so excited for Lisa to be a grandmother because she has such love for all of her animals and she is such a doting person when it comes to animals and things that I can't wait to see how she behaves as a grandmother. Not that we'll really probably see too much of it because, you know, she's not in Beverly Hills anymore, but maybe on Vanderpump Rules. I mean, everybody's got a baby on Vanderpump Rules now. So just like include Pandora in that.
Yes.
Well, some unfortunate news out of Bravo this week. Out of an abundance of caution, we are postponing BravoCon 2021 until next year, 2022.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's sad because we were all so excited about it since we didn't have it last year. But just, you know, it's just so unclear what's happening. And yeah, I mean, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely sad news, but it's the best for everyone involved. Talent, guests, all of us.
Yeah.
Next year, it'll be bigger and better. More time to save up for that VIP ticket too.
True.
Bravo's also running a season 1 marathon that starts Monday, August 16th, and it features some of our favorite shows like Vanderpump Rules, Real Housewives of New York City, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I think one of the best first seasons ever, Real Housewives of Atlanta, Southern Charm, and Below Deck Med.
Yeah, so it's season 1 of all of those shows, so definitely binge those.
Yeah.
And Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles returns for season 13 in just a few weeks on Thursday, September 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Woo!
And you can watch a Super Tease at BravoTV.com.
That's right. All right, what are we recapping today?
Real Housewives of Potomac.
Always.
Below Deck Med. And Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, man. Plus, we have an interview with Ashley Darby from Real Housewives of Potomac. Potomac. Okay, baby Dean, loving all on baby Dylan. The cutest thing ever.
So cute.
Kids don't always impress me.
Right.
Not always, but that was really adorable.
I really am into Dean as a person because I just love how he always walks into a room and he sees a housewife and is just overly cautious.
As he should be.
Like, he walked in, he saw Giselle, and he didn't start crying, but he just sort of had an eye on her.
And he was like,
I don't trust you, Giselle.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be careful with this cast.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him one bit. In regards to Ashley, I really kind of enjoy her beef with Candace.
What is it even over? I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I am not downplaying what happened a couple seasons ago. And Candace was tweeting crazy things at Ashley.
Yeah.
But is that what we're still mad about?
I think it's a number of things. I brought her into my house. I gave her a beverage. There was that whole situation. There were a lot of things over the years that have added up to the two of them just not really respecting one another, but also just straight up not liking one another. Not everyone's going to like everybody.
But can I say, I think Ashley just doesn't care. I think she's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Candace seems mad still.
Right. Candace seems to intentionally not include Ashley in things, brings it up in interviews a little more often than Ashley does. Ashley's busy. She's got a baby. She's not worried about that kind of stuff. And Candace is pretty busy, so she probably shouldn't be worried about it. But they are on the same show. They're on the same cast. At some point, they're going to cross paths.
Right.
But I like that they are still carrying this into the new season, because we need some beef that's other than Giselle and Karen.
Well, yeah. I'm also like, I think we're going to get it based on the super tease. But yes, I see where you're going.
So I actually watched this episode an uncensored version.
Right.
Because it was like one of the, you know, original cuts or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I love when we get to do that. It is really such a treat. And I wish more of our listeners could have the opportunity. But watching Giselle and Ashley talk about giving birth and what happens and what can happen when you're giving birth, and watching her say, holy shit, I'm shitting on these people in relation to when she gave birth, I cracked up. That was a highlight of my night.
He gave you a little gift.
So this time, what happened to the booty hole?
Big things happened down there that didn't happen the first time.
Did you take a shit?
I did
that.
And I was like, holy shit, I'm shitting on these people. Like, I felt horrible.
They're like wiping it like it's no big deal.
It freaked Jamal out.
Can I tell you, it came up years ago and a Bravo brainstorm. And one of the things that I remember came out of a group I was in was, we should find a way to show uncensored episodes of Bravo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not showing like naked people or anything, which would be phenomenal.
Absolutely.
But I just mean the cursing makes such a difference. And it when does. We do watch these early cuts, it changes, especially when it's out of anger. You forget how harsh it can, you know, cursing at someone can sound. Like, you know, it's a different thing to just, you know, say it in conversation. It's another thing to say F you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you forget because we're just so used to the beep, beep, beep. It's pretty good.
Which I do enjoy. I do enjoy a bleep. I love that we get bleeped on this
show.
Bleeps
can be funny. They can add a sort of comedic element, I find.
Definitely. But in those moments when I'm watching an episode for the podcast and I realize I have an uncensored version, I just feel like it's Christmas morning.
Right.
You know, I'm just like, oh, yes. Curse, Giselle, curse. Also, speaking of Giselle, in her interview, she basically says she doesn't like spreading rumors. She doesn't like to talk about what's on the Twitter and what's on the blogs.
Giselle, you are lying to yourself.
I mean, come on. Who is she kidding?
You know, I don't like to really discuss a lot of nonsense that the social media and the Twitter has to say.
She loves it more than anyone.
More than anyone. And here's the thing. I saw another tweet that was comparing Giselle to Kenya. And I very often come to Kenya's defense and very rarely come to Giselle's. And I don't know why that is, because they are both pretty shady, don't mind spreading rumors. But for some reason, I'm more forgiving of Kenya, maybe because she owns it in a different way than Giselle does. I think for Giselle to say that in her interview moment of like, oh, I don't like to spread rumors. And it's like, but this is the second season in a row that you've done it about somebody's husband. So I don't think that's totally true.
Right. Absolutely. Oof. I'm just waiting for that to come up next week.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. So the rumor is something is going on with Eddie. It might be the reason that Wendy got all of this work done. Yes, some TNA, some happiness. I don't know. I don't know. We do then cut to a scene with them, and they're discussing Wendy's future, what she's working on, where she is right now in her life. A lot of the conversation actually reminded me of Court and Cam from Real Housewives of Dallas, because Eddie's like, do you have a business plan? What's the next step?
Right.
What's the budget? You know, where is this money coming from? And Wendy's like, oh, I don't know. I didn't register anything. I'm just making candles. You're paying for it. And it reminded me a lot of when she was doing, what was it, Pink Dog or Glitter Dog?
Yeah, no, well, I mean, it's still a thing.
It's still a thing. And it did
Sparkle
actually.
Dog.
Sparkle Dog. It became a success for Cam. Good for her. Proud of you. But Wendy, for being so smart, I'm surprised she's not going about it in a more, I don't know, structured way.
Right. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Smarts come out. They present themselves in a number of ways.
Right. Also, why is she using Eddie's money to fund this? She should be using her housewife's check.
Right.
Like, hello. Just, you know, recycle that back into your business.
Right.
I don't know. So then we finally get the scene where Mia comes in, sits down with Giselle and Robin.
Okay, this I have strong opinions about. Because, So Andrew and I were going out the other night, and we were going to a show, but then we were going to this bar that has a very specific vibe. And I was like, oh, it's so hard to dress for these two things that are back to back. And he was like, "Why? I don't know why. I think what you're wearing is great." And I was like, I don't have time to explain the nuances of female clothing to you.
Yeah.
But this is a very good example of that. What was Mia wearing to this, like, family style grill? You know what I mean?
In a strip,
like,
mall.
Right. She was dressed like she was going, you know,
awards show, red carpet.
Something that was not this. Now, she just looks so out of place. She looked great, but she looks so out of place.
So the phrase, you can never be overdressed, just underdressed.
I really feel it is the opposite. Because I feel like you can be underdressed and it just makes you look cooler in a way. Because you're just like, oh, they're like, oh, she did not care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you show up with a fur to Chili's, let's say, it's like, well, someone's trying.
Right. Well, yeah, Chili's is like, okay, come on. 2-for-1 margaritas. You don't need to show up in a fur. It reminds me of a couple seasons ago, Beverly Hills, when Erica showed up in that fresh off the runway, what was it, Moschino or something?
Moschino.
And it was very, for some of the women, she was underdressed.
Right.
And she was like, this is literally fresh off the runway. It's thousands of dollars. It's designer.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could go either way. But Mia shows up. She opened all the way up to Giselle and Robin and revealed so much about her past. Really, just, I didn't expect it to be so, I don't know, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we knew that she grew up in the foster system, but to hear the details of that experience she had and all of it was just like really, really sad.
I think what makes it a little bit heartbreaking is the way that she says it with such, these are just the facts of her life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Yeah. It seems like she's not saddened by it. She's almost empowered by it. And we see that a little bit at the beginning of the episode when she talks about what she's going through with her kids and she's working so much and maybe she's not spending enough time with them, but she doesn't want them to want for anything the way that she did. So she's really turned that pain and that struggle into becoming a successful businesswoman and mom and all of that. But it's tough to balance. I think that's what she's struggling with right now.
Right.
So, yep, I got grandbabies.
That's a lot.
It is okay. A lot.
I want to know the backstory. Can I have the backstory? So you're from Annapolis.
Yes. And this is probably the big part that I want you guys to understand. I was in the foster care system.
Oh.
But I was living with my dad.
He's very abusive towards my stepmom.
Okay.
And I came downstairs, there was glass everywhere. She was bleeding from the top of her head, and I tried to break it up. And my dad, like, pulled me back, threw me into the TV. So naturally, I have, like, all kinds of cuts and scars.
Okay.
And I went to school the next day, and a friend saw the blood coming through my shirt and told. And that was the last day I went home.
And so they came and got you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's sad.
Yeah. You know, when you're a child, you don't know. Yeah. You just want to go home, yeah. right? You don't want to be in a stranger's house with a whole bunch of other kids sharing a bunk bed.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? My mom and I have not started having a good relationship until as of recently. She's been clean for 10 years.
So she's in a better place.
Yeah.
Was your mom just like, was she young? Was she in the street? Was she in this?
All the above.
No judgment because.
No, I don't want you.
Know,
yeah, please.
Want, like, just, you know, yeah. want my husband's parents, both of them passed away from AIDS, from, you know, heroin use and stuff. So, like.
My dad passed away from AIDS.
Really?
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
because of heroin.
Life is a journey, right?
Yeah.
It's ups and downs. You make mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's no judgment, but it's, it is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You really have been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And. It's a testament that you're sitting here with a fur coat on and your beautiful dress. I mean, you're a real person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I will say, you know, Giselle giving Mia that praise that she did in the interview is one of those things we don't very often see from Giselle when there's a new woman in the mix. She won't always necessarily give her flowers the way she might Robin or one of her close friends. So I like when Giselle retires from being a hater,
right.
even if it's just for 5 minutes. And Mia deserved that. And
yeah.
so I'm glad we saw Giselle come from a more sensitive place in that moment.
Totally.
More of that, Giselle.
Yeah.
What did you think about Robin and Giselle kicking Mia out of the room, basically making her switch so that they could
be closer? Go to Williamsburg?
Yeah.
I feel like we're seeing a lot more of this. Like, we saw it with Atlanta, like, just this idea of a hierarchy and, mm-hmm. like, we've put in the time so we get the good room, which is very funny.
Yeah.
Also, Williamsburg.
I was like, are they coming to Brooklyn?
But also, I saw this meme that was like, please get vaccinated so Real Housewives can go out of the country again.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, what was the last trip that I was, when the Dallas ladies went to Oklahoma?
Yeah, I miss the glamour and the glitz of going for the Housewives going to some place that's totally out of their comfort zone. Or even just a nice beach getaway would
right.
be fine. But Colonial is that Colonial?
I mean, between that, Salem, Massachusetts, where Bershon's like, I want to turn up. Why aren't we turning up? It's like, because
you're in Salem.
There's nothing to do there except seances, you know? Come on. I know. I mean, Williamsburg, I looked it up in real time, like as I was watching it, wondering which state it was even in. And there's a Williamsburg in pretty much every state
in
that
Virginia.
Area.
It was Virginia.
Yeah. I was like, is it Maryland? Are they in Pennsylvania? I mean, where are they going? It could be any of these.
I asked Andrew if he'd been because he grew up outside of DC, and he was like, yeah, I think I went once. I don't remember there being much to do there.
Yeah, I feel like it's the equivalent of what I brought up a few weeks ago talking about Salem, Old Sturbridge Village, which a listener reached out to me to be like, I used to go there growing up. Oh my God, I can't believe you mentioned that. It reminds me of the same thing. It's sort
right.
of like, it's a place you go for a field trip as a child in elementary school
right.
when you're learning about American history. But is it a place we want to see our housewives turn up?
No.
No. Sorry. Not sorry. So I spoke with Ashley Darby about what it was like bringing Dylan home to meet Dean, those rumors about Dr. Wendy's husband, Eddie, and more from the season of Real Housewives of Potomac. Here's that interview. All right, guys, we are here with Ashley Darby and Dylan from Real Housewives of Potomac. What's up, Ashley?
Oh, you know, just tending to the king here, King Dylan. I'm definitely
the new ruler of the house.
Yes, yes. It's interesting. Michael and I are way down on the totem pole these days.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that you have Dylan with you because I want to talk a little bit. You know, last week we saw you get very emotional before giving birth. So talk about what it felt like finally bringing Dylan home and meeting Dean for the first time.
Oh, I don't think I could ever have prepared myself for how that would feel in my mind, especially when I found that I was pregnant in June of 2020, and then the baby was born in March of 2021. So all that time, I'm just thinking about picturing, just trying to anticipate what that will be like. And then when the moment actually came that my two children who I've prayed for and just wanted to have so badly, to see them interacting with each other my heart actually did a little leap.
Yeah.
You know, like when your heart skips a beat, it actually did that.
Oh my God. I mean, I loved that we got to see that moment between Dean and Dylan on the latest episode. It was just so precious, and just the smile on Dean's face, and just that connection, that instant connection. Like, we got to be a part of that. So thank you for sharing that with everyone.
Yes, thank you. And I, you know, with my first pregnancy, I was a little bit hesitant. I actually started filming season 5 when I was 2 months postpartum, right? And I was just like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know, I was in my isolation bubble that a lot of new moms go into. And so I was just not really sure about how this process would look for me sharing my life. But now this go around with Dylan, it actually felt very natural because I just felt like now everyone was a part of our family.
Totally. Now, as you know, since you have a second child, I've heard a lot of moms are less worried the second time around. Like, it's like they'll pick up, you know, pacifiers off the ground and like barely wipe it off and be like, they're fine. Have you found that you're a little more loose? Because you were very, particular, I think, the first time around.
Yes, particular is a good word. My husband would say annoying, because I'm constantly like just overseeing everybody. Definitely, I am a little more laxed this time. Mainly because when you see that your first child turned out okay, you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, nothing that I did caused any extreme harm this time. So I'm sure everything will be good this time around too.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just like, all right, I know what I'm doing. This is good. We're good.
Yeah. But it still throws you some loops every now and again, you know, because no two kids are the same.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what changes have you seen in Michael, not just since, you know, Dylan came along, but even when Dean came around, like what have you seen different in him?
Well, you know, Michael has a dad, he has two older children, and I've seen him interact with his kids as adults.
Yeah.
So I knew him in that capacity. But to see how he interacts with babies and toddlers, there's like a softer side to Michael that I didn't really know existed, honestly. He's a businessman. He's very analytical. He's super pragmatic. And so to see him soften and to see how, you know, Dean can just crawl all over him or knock his glasses off his face and everything just rolls off his back. It's a really nice change, and it actually makes me even more attracted to him.
Yeah, well, and I think you've mentioned before that Dean is very close with Michael, like a little bit of maybe a daddy's boy. Are you hoping that Dylan will be more of a mama's boy?
You know, one can only hope. So far, Dylan is just like Dean. I mean, they're very similar in their mannerisms and how they play. Even in their milestones, like Dylan is now sitting up and he's about to get a tooth, and all of this timing was right along with Dean. And finally, they already played together. So I feel like it's going to be Dean and Dylan playing together with Daddy. So
right.
I may have him for like maybe a year or so. And then when he starts walking, Daddy's going to reign supreme again.
Yeah. You'll just be sitting there like, all right, you know what? I'll put my feet up for a bit. It's fine.
Yes, honey. I'm looking forward to that a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Now, after this second pregnancy, what did you do to get back into shape? Because I know you're big into yoga. Do you have any tips for other moms out there who are looking to, you know, shed baby weight or what have you?
Well, yeah, the first thing I would say, you know, is to not pressure yourself. There's a lot of societal pressure to look a certain way. And you see these moms who have bounced back, even me, for example. I will say that I'm a little more educated this time about fitness and about how my diet and everything impacts my body, because it's not just about food. It's also about our hormones and how our hormones affect our weight retention and our fluid retention and adrenal fatigue and all these things. So I ended up following this really good meal plan that is made for breastfeeding moms. And it worked so well for me that I'm actually back to my weight before I had Dean.
Wow.
So yeah, it's something like reverse carb cycling or something like that. But whatever meal plan any mom looks into, she has to make sure that it's safe for breastfeeding or if that's what she's doing. So.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a holistic approach, right? You have to do a number of things and factor a number of considerations in to get back to that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the diet was first just because I wasn't sleeping. This baby is a little bit more finicky than Dean was. Dean took a pacifier and a bottle and Dylan did not do either of those. He wouldn't take anything but me for the first 5 months of his life, I would say. He's about to be 6 months now. So he just started taking a bottle.
Wow.
So that was it was a little bit stressful. So that made it so that I couldn't really exercise. I didn't have the energy to exercise. Even just walking outside was, oh my gosh, like I felt like a zombie.
Yeah.
And now that I'm getting a little bit more sleep, I find that now I have more energy to exercise and I can even, you know, I can eat better and all of that plays into it. Sleep deprivation is the number one, I don't want to say issue, but
yeah,
it's definitely the hardest thing to combat for anyone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just visited a friend of mine in California about a week ago, and she just had a baby too. And she just kind of gave me this look of just like, I'm so tired. And I was like, I know, I can't imagine. Like, I feel so bad. You know, she's like, every couple of hours, it's just like awake again.
I know. And in the beginning, because you're so euphoric and you have so much adrenaline, you're so happy, the first like 2 weeks, it's kind of not as bad. But then as time goes on and you get into a routine and you're still not sleeping, especially if you have other children or if you have to go back to work, it can just be brutal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now I have to ask, do you guys think you'll go for number three?
You know, it's interesting. So Michael said he was going to get a vasectomy when Dylan was 6 months, which will be next month.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he kind of talked about it a little bit the other day, but it wasn't super serious. He was like, oh, you know, Dylan's about to be 6 months. Remember our conversation? And I said, yeah, you know, I recall. I have a little memory of it. But
you're like, is that appointment scheduled or?
I didn't want to push it because I think the more I asked about it, the more he would be inclined to pursue it. So
yeah,
I was just going to let that one go. But honestly, I'm a little more torn now because I do feel better physically now, but it took me a while to get here.
Yeah.
And children, you know, they just really do change the dynamic of your life, your relationship, everything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at that point, if you went on to number three, it'd be like, well, do we need to move? Do we need more space? Like, what's next? You know, it opens up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah. Well, we're already talking about moving because we are in this condo. We love it. It's so great. We, you know, we have the view of all of Washington, D.C. It's amazing. But it's really not practical for two very active, rambunctious kids who have a number of toys. So Michael is slowly coming around to the idea.
Would it be more of a suburb, somewhere with a yard type of situation?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a suburb. I probably would still live close to where I am now.
Yeah.
Just because I like being really close to the city. And I love the suburbs, but like, you know, where Karen lives and where Giselle lives, every time I get out of the car, I just swear there's going to be a snake in the driveway. So because there's just too much wildlife out there for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when it gets dark out, there's no street lights in there. It's, I just can't deal. I would swear that an axe murderer is there.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm with you. People are always like, aren't you nervous living in a city? There's so much crime. And I'm like, no, I'm more nervous when I'm somewhere in the middle of the woods and I've seen too many movies. Okay. No, I'm not going.
Yes. Hello. I agree.
How is Michael's foray into film producing going? Has he pursued that some more?
He hasn't really. He's tabled it. I don't think Michael really understood how much, or maybe he didn't remember just how much goes into having two children under the age of two.
Yeah.
So he goes to work. He wakes up in the morning with Dean, makes Dean's breakfast at 6 a.m., goes to work. He works from 8 to 7 p.m., comes home, puts Dean in the bath, watches TV with him, puts him to bed. And then he's so tired. Like, he just doesn't have the energy.
Right. Who has time to produce?
I mean, and he talked about it the other day, but I just don't think he's like, I'm so tired. I can barely get what I need to get done at work for my real estate business.
Right.
So maybe when the baby gets, and he's getting there, once Dylan starts sleeping through the night, I think it will help all of us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That we'll table that for now. Along with the vasectomy. All of that is tabled.
Well, let me tell you, the thing about Michael is he always has his wheels turning. So even if he's not talking to me about it, I'm sure he's thinking about it.
Right.
So eventually, or he may come to me even tonight and say, hey, by the way, I scheduled my vasectomy. I never know what to predict with Michael Darby. So
there you go. It's always keeping you on your toes.
100%.
Let's get into the season a little bit. And this most recent episode, Giselle comes by and she shares this theory about, you know, Wendy's enhancements and how they might have something to do with these Eddie rumors that are on the blog. So what were your thoughts when you heard about that?
Well, I was a little surprised initially. I didn't really expect that to ever be something that was even in the stratosphere. I didn't know that anyone would even, you know, talk about Eddie that way.
Yeah.
So even though I was a little bit perplexed too about how different Wendy is, and it's not different in a bad way, but it is different. Someone who presented a very strong sense of who she is when I first met her to now be just different from that person altogether in such a short amount of time is a little bit surprising. So
yeah,
if we were to try to think about, you know, could there be some other reason as to why Wendy wanted to enhance her natural beauty or enhance her beauty, I should say, then, you know, like, I think you just have to consider everything, especially because, you know, Giselle and I have had our share of issues in our relationship. And we know, at least I know from my experience, that a lot of times when there are issues in a relationship, sometimes they manifest in other ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not saying that there's any credibility again to the rumor, but more so that it could have ignited something in Wendy.
Totally. I mean, I've sort of chalked it up to like second season glow up, right? We see that with housewives pretty often. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe she just decided, hey, I've seen myself on TV. I'd like to make some improvements.
Yeah. And I don't begrudge that by any means. But as I've said, it just doesn't strike me as something that Wendy in particular would do. Maybe a woman who lacked some confidence or who was still maybe trying to find herself and wasn't quite sure of her identity. But Wendy, Dr. Wendy, as she made it very clear, was very sure of who she was. And so I just didn't expect that to be something that Wendy did in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Well, at this point in the season, I don't think you've spent a lot of time with Mia, but Mia has been very open about her enhancements that she's made over the years. So what was your first impression when you met her?
Well, when Mia first walked into the door at Wendy's house, she was like a glitter ball, a disco ball. Okay. The light was literally like, was cascading off of her jacket. She was wearing this bedazzled jacket.
Yeah.
And so that already, you know, it spoke for her before she even opened her mouth. And I already knew that she was a diva. I could sense it. And then when she sat down and she was actually really positive and she was very light and bubbly, just even in that first conversation we had in Wendy's living room. And I knew I would like her. I did. It was a little surprising to me when she admitted that she basically had done a 180 on her physique, but you know, I can appreciate her honesty.
Right. Just lead with it so nobody can suggest or question it later on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Mia has cracked the code because it takes some people a lot of time to get that. I won't name names, but it took some of us a lot of time to get there. Even Wendy was a little apprehensive about sharing her, you know, her right. Booty, her apple bottom. So it was,
yeah,
nice.
She had a whole rollout plan for her presentation.
That's right. So I should ask Mia. I never asked Mia if she did anything like that or like if she, you know, had a little coming out party after
reveal
her
party.
Yeah. I wonder.
There might be one to come. Who knows? Well, also at this point in the season, we know you're planning to make a day trip to Williamsburg. So talk a little bit about your mindset going into this trip, knowing that Candace, you know, didn't really invite you, but she's okay with you coming.
I didn't really expect Candace to be super excited to see me, but I did appreciate at least that she wasn't forbidding me from coming, because really, you know, me coming on that trip was not about her. It was more so about seeing my friends and just getting out of the house. And, you know, we'd all had a really difficult year. And in addition to having a difficult year, I had a baby. So there were some compiled things that I had been going through. So it was nice to have a little change of scene, even if it did stress me out quite a bit to leave the baby.
Yeah.
I ultimately knew it was good for me. So
have you listened to Candace's song?
I have not, actually. I haven't listened to the song. I haven't seen the video. Robin and I did the after show together on Monday and she referenced it and she said it was good. So, you know, kudos to her.
It's a bop, Ashley. It's a bop. Okay. I will say that much.
Well, from what I hear, there's some auto-tune in there, as I've been told by a number of people, and Candace tried to come for me with my auto-tune.
Right.
And, you know, that was the pot calling the kettle right there.
It sure was. Yeah. You know, a little auto-tune mm-hmm. always helps. Okay. I mean, look, it's fine. It's trendy.
I mean, Beyonce uses auto-tune. Right. I don't know really any artist who doesn't use a little auto-tune.
No, you need it.
You know, but I will tell you, with my song Coffee and Love, when people say I use auto-tune, I don't begrudge them. I don't. It's true, because my producer, he did overdo the auto-tune a little bit. So I have to agree with them there.
Right, right. There's a fine line, right? It can be overkill in certain instances, but yeah. You know, everyone does use it. So it's like no need to throw shade over it.
That's right.
Are you still in touch with Monique?
Oh yeah, actually, Monique and I'm going to be doing a little appearance on Monique's YouTube channel. She's going to have a special guest, like some relationship expert or something, on her channel. So we're going to talk together on her YouTube channel. We chat and we talk, and I checked on her after her bird passed away and told her I was here for her.
I know, T'Challa. Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
You know, it's like, even though I'm not a big bird person and he and I weren't the best friends, it was still really sad. Right. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. I mean, everyone knew how much she cared for that bird, you know? And so that was like, it's just knowing that her whole family was going through that, it was really sad.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Well, obviously there's been a ton of buzz, not this season, but like outside of the show, about Nicki Minaj potentially having some role in the reunion. So if she were to somehow participate in some fashion, what would be the first thing you would say to her?
Why don't you follow me on Instagram? That's what I want to know, Nicki. I mean, it happened. Right. It was a whole thing. I want to say maybe like season 2 or 3 that Nicki started following Karen and
Monique, right?
Or Giselle. I can't remember who it was now, but it was like a couple of my castmates. And, you know, of course the blogs were like, oh, well, if she chose these girls, she obviously doesn't like these girls. So I was like, dang, Nicki doesn't like me. But, you know, when she did post that thing on Instagram, a few of the ladies commented, and she made it very clear that she has some questions for each of us.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God. I really hope that this comes together in some way, because I think it would just be so hilarious to have, just even if it's just a segment, you know, with all of you guys. I think we need to will it into existence.
Well, based on Nicki's tenacity, I definitely think this is going to happen. My girl is manifesting this. I don't know if you saw the way she even worded her post. She said, I am, we are. She put that in the current tense. So
right.
If there's a will, there's a way. Nicki is going to be there with us on SH.
Absolutely. Well, now I know Nicki doesn't follow you, but to be fair, Rihanna does. So have you ever DM'd with her?
So I don't know if it's like cool, you know, I'm trying not to be all like uncool about it, but yes, we've had a conversation before and it was
Ashley.
I know, and it was amazing. And she was very sweet. And yeah, I was like, I was shaking. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect her to write me back. And she did. So
that is the coolest thing ever. I mean, I have definitely slid into her DMs before to be like, I know you're a Bravo fan. Like, I co-host this podcast. If you ever want to come on and talk about it, like, I'm here. Obviously, she didn't even leave me on read. She just never opened it. But, you know, it's fine. I'm not mad.
I know it was definitely not personal. I can only imagine how much she gets bombarded with, you know, like, even being a Bravo Leb and the things that I see. I mean, I feel so bad because there's no way I can keep up with the people who message me. And I just love the fans so much.
Right. Of course. Yeah. But it's so overwhelming because people are just tagging you. They're mentioning you in their story. They're sending you things in DM. It's like all over the place.
Yeah. And that's actually the best part of being on Housewives, you know, like, we're being so vulnerable and people have strong opinions about us, whether they agree with our choices or not. But, you know, that's just the best part of having, you know, this platform, is that we can share and connect with so many people who relate to us, or, you know, don't really fool with us.
or don't. Yeah. Yeah. Or have other things to say.
Exactly. I take it all. I welcome it all.
Right. Well, before I let you go, I wanted to play a quick game called Hot Takes with Ashley Darby, because I know you're a big fan of Bravo across the board. You watch all of our shows. So I wanted to get your take on a couple of other things that are going on other shows. So I want to start first with Shaz. What are your thoughts on the situation between Paulina and Mike?
Okay, guys. No, I have not seen Shaz.
Oh, no.
I know. I'm so sorry. I really do go to sleep mad early. Well,
what about last season?
Well, last season, was that when Reza and MJ were having their...
Yes.
So last season was really tough because that was when I started becoming friends with MJ. And I really also like Reza. And so when we were at BravoCon, I don't remember if I saw MJ then, but I definitely saw Reza. And I kind of wanted to be like, Reza, come on, you guys are friends. But I put it aside and, you know, we just talked about other things. But ultimately, I just really hope that they can be friends, because I know how difficult it is to maintain your friendship, you know, under certain circumstances. But I really think that they can do it. They just have to both be willing to bury the hatchet and bury it real deep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this season, they have started to make amends. There's still some issues with MJ's husband, Tommy. You know, Reza had the restraining order. He's willing to lift it, but Tommy is still, he has a lot of reservations about, you know, Reza coming around their son and all sorts of stuff. So they are making progress, but I think it's still going to take some time for them to fully get back to where they were, if they even do, you know?
Yeah. And it's so interesting that even if you two people make up, there still are other people in their spheres who were impacted, who were hurt or upset.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if like you and your friends, you're like, yes, we're good, you know, we can pound it out. But there are still, whether it be your spouse or your other friends or even your parents, you know, they can have a harder time because of things that have happened too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so are you caught up on Real Housewives of New York City?
Yes. I'm not super caught up, but I have a general idea of what's going on because I do watch it when I can between everything else going on. And Vershawn right. is one of my good friends.
Oh, okay. So, okay. So what's your take on, I guess, just Ramona's behavior this season when it comes to a lot of the race discussions?
Well, it's interesting that Ramona kind of dances around the race talk, and she's trying to take the focus away from it. Like in certain situations, she makes it known that it's not a race thing. It's not about race, yada, yada. But I feel like Ramona has to be a little more sensitive to the time and understand that, you know, this is a movement that has been a long time coming. It's been bubbling under the surface. And finally, there is more progress being made for all people, not just heteronormative people, but
right.
all people across the board.
Yeah, no, great point. Yeah. Are you caught up on Below Deck Med?
No, I haven't watched Below Deck Med either, but it comes on so late. So that's why I can't watch it. I know
it's true, but you can also, you can watch it on Peacock. It's available a week early. So if you need to binge and catch up and want to get ahead, that's a place you can do it.
Wait, it's on Peacock early?
It is. The episodes come out a week early on Peacock.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And there you go. See,
I really got to catch binge. Up. I promise. I really do promise that as soon as I start getting a little more sleep, I'm going to be right back up on my jams.
It's totally fine. We get it. Well, the last one I had, which, you know, I don't know if you're watching Beverly Hills this season, but I'm sure you've seen a lot of the stuff going on with Erica. So any hot takes on the Erica Girardi divorce, legal issues, what have you?
Well, honey, I feel like if you don't know what's happening between Erica, you're living under a rock, okay?
right.
Even me. So I would say that I really like Erica. She's really sweet. When I was first pregnant with Dean, she was one of the first people to congratulate me. But you know, I just feel like it's nice to see a more vulnerable side of her that she didn't, hi honey, a more vulnerable side that she didn't show previously. And I hate that it's under these circumstances. It's certainly never what I would want for anyone. But to see that she is willing to be open and vulnerable during a difficult time in her life really just makes me like her even more, honestly.
Yeah, it is really crazy to see her just laying it all out, you know? And I think so many people are questioning, is she acting? Is it all lies? There are so many contradictions, and there's still so much more to come this season that I'm really curious to see how the viewer reception of her might shift and change, you know, as the season goes on. And they haven't filmed the reunion yet, as far as I know. Yeah. So that is going to be a big, big moment, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. Well, also Erica's stuff, her dealings are not just playing out on Bravo. They're playing out like on the news.
Yeah.
I mean, this is right. This is like real legal stuff now. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But even if people do think she's acting or what have you, it's really not easy to share something that's so raw about yourself. And especially a person like Erica, who does like to be strong and, you know, she's been through a lot in her life. So the fact that she is even sharing anything about that situation really shows that it's something major in her life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Ashley, thank you for all your hot takes. Thank you for chatting with me. I will let you go tend to Dylan, to Dean, to Michael, whoever you need to take care of. And it's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I really appreciate you. And, you know, this was actually a really fun interview, so I appreciate it.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon, Ashley.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye. Below Deck Med?
Yeah. What do you think of this primary charter guest? Because I feel like she's being fussy for the sake of being fussy.
100%. She annoyed me so much when she pointed to the crumbs on the table and was like, are we going to clear this off? And Lexi's like, yeah, as soon as we're done with this, you know, we'll come back and we'll wipe the table down between courses. And she's like, can you just do it now? It's really bothering me. Wipe it off the table yourself.
Although I was happy that complaint was pointed at Lexi, and I wish that all of them had been just to give Lexi an extra slice of humble pie.
Yeah.
I think that would have been okay for me. But just seeing the way that she was like stressing everyone out was like, is this necessary?
No.
I mean, her one valid complaint were the cakes because they looked terrible.
Okay, those rivaled Chef Mila's nachos, in my opinion. Okay,
well,
those were bad.
That's terrible.
Bad cakes.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, they were better, you know, they were better than the nachos. I was like, well, anything would be.
No, they were like equivalent.
See, in terms of worst dishes ever served in Below Deck history, I agree with you.
Those cakes may have tasted good, but the presentation, that you got to order from a bakery on the shore in that case. I mean,
Okay, my favorite part was Katie talking about how she was on a yacht, working on a yacht with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh my God, I know.
Because I could have an entire Below Deck offshoot that is just yachties and stews talking about their experiences with celebrities.
Yes.
They said he likes to party there.
Oh, he does.
And he has lots of models.
Oh, yes, he does.
I heard about him from one of my friends who did like med boats.
First celebrity I ever met. First time on a yacht.
I am f***ing green at this point. And the chief shoot goes up to me and was like, I want you to make sure that Leo has a drink in his hand all night. I'm like, why the is she trusting me?
Loves a dart. Loves a Bloody Mary too. But it's okay. He's still Leonardo DiCaprio.
They said he is a wild one.
Yeah. He's outrageous.
Oh my God. I think she probably could have revealed so much more of what he might have requested.
I feel like she was really teetering on the line of too far already. She was like, he likes to party.
Yeah.
Like she said it a few times.
Which, I mean, we all know that. I think when I imagine Leonardo DiCaprio in my mind and think about where he is right now, I picture him on a yacht.
Yeah.
Where else would he be?
Right.
You know? Oh, I love him. Do you agree with Chef Matt's third chance?
I think we're taking a big risk continuing on with him because, again, will we have a repeat? Will he have another, you know, like, I don't know with him.
I don't know either. And the fact that replacing him is difficult. Replacing anyone is difficult at this stage because of quarantine. The fact that Sandy had a chef waiting in the wings and decided, you know what? No, I'm going to give Matt a third chance. That does put everybody at risk again, because what if in a week or less than he bails again and then that other person has left quarantine? Then you got, you know, Malia and the deckhands making brunch again.
Right.
I don't know. It's probably the easiest thing for Sandy to do is just to let Matt stick around and, you know, third time's a charm, I guess.
Yeah. He and Lexi are thankfully being smart about, well, I mean, it's still early on, but trying to get ahead of any bad behavior. They were both trying to limit themselves in terms of drinking, which is smart. But I totally agreed with Lexi about the hypocrisy of someone like Malia pressuring Lexi into doing shots.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, which do you want? Do you want me? Do you want turn up Lexi? Who, you know, potentially will get volatile?
Unleash,
or
yeah.
Do you want chill Lexi? And I do think it's unfair to be like, well, can't you just get drunk and not be, you know, angry? Well, it doesn't work like that for everyone. Alcohol does not work the same on everyone.
Right, exactly. And one thing I'll say about both Lexi and Matt is it's still early enough in the season that their misbehavior so far, maybe there's only up from here. Now that they're both a little more aware of how they need to cut back on the drinking, interact with other people, take on stress and manage that, maybe we'll see them actually improve across the board.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Not too much, though. We still need some drama.
Okay. I laughed so hard. Okay. Well, first of all, it was very cringy watching Dave hit on Malia again.
Mm-hmm.
But I laughed so hard when Lloyd was like, I was yearning for him to look in my eyes so I could be like, don't do it.
I was yearning for him to look at my eyes so I could be like, don't do it.
Because we were all just watching a car crash about to happen.
And you know that look that you would give a friend of yours?
Yeah.
And you just gave it to me now, yeah. Where it's like in the eyes, where you're just like, back away, step away, retreat, abort mission. You know, like you want to be there for your friend in that way. And Lloyd just was like, please look in my direction.
I mean, in a way, it's admirable. I like that Dave is going for what he wants and he just needs the yes or the no so he can move on with his life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just knew it was going to be a no. And you can see it in Malia's eyes where she's like, please don't make me say no, which I've been in that position. Like, I totally related to what she was saying in an interview where she was like, it's this thing where you don't want to have to be a bitch. So you try to let someone down without saying directly, I'm not attracted to you. I don't want to date you. Those are harsh statements, it feels like.
Yeah.
So you try to sort of wiggle around it and be like, ha ha ha, you know, like, but then if they don't get the message, you know,
yeah.
It's hard.
I mean, unfortunately, we've seen Malia in this weird position in the past, last season with Pete and his behavior, calling her sweetie and these advances that weren't really advances, but they were, I don't know, microaggressions. You know, it's just like, it's something that women have to deal with so much more than men, I would venture to say, is having to shut someone down. And David was approaching it in a respectful way. It was cringy, but he was still saying, if it's yes, then let me know. If it's no, it's fine. I'm fine with either answer.
And it wasn't being even sexual. It was just like, I like you. And, you know, do you like me?
Yeah. And, you know, Malia, I thought, still handled it in a professional way, in a kind way, let him down easy, you know, and that's got to be tough because she's cute and I'm sure she's had to do that many times, and especially in like a work environment.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's really tough. Well, then we get into this whole thing, speaking of Lloyd,
where
he gets super emotional, talking about his previous experience working on a yacht where he was basically harassed, it sounds like, by his former boss. And called the F word.
I went from a job where I was God to 50 people, and then I went to yachting. Like a piece of shit, my captain. Like a
I want it.
Oh my god, boy.
It's not like I'm 90% straight.
That's, babe, who cares? Does that matter? Does it? Boy, look at me. Look at me. Look at me. You're a beautiful person, okay?
You honestly are. Your soul is like insane.
The whole time they call me a.
You are a beautiful person.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
It was, you know, very emotional to even watch it, I felt.
Yeah.
And he is such a nice person. And to see a nice person having been kicked that way.
Right.
It's just terrible.
Well, because some people who are terrible mistake kindness for weakness.
Yeah.
And they prey on that. And it sounds like that was the kind of boss he had before, which is just awful. And not only that, but Lloyd was opening up this conversation with the crew about sexuality and it being a spectrum. And Malia even steps in to be like, you know, I'm bisexual, essentially being like, I've been on both sides and that's, I'm fine with that, you know, and it was really ended up being a healthy conversation, I think, for everybody. And this scale, this, you know, Kinsey scale is what it's technically called. It came up on Family Karma earlier on in the season between Dylan and Vishal. They kept calling it a Richter scale. Vishal was mistaking it for, you know, earthquake measurement, but it's actually a scale of sexuality. And I think more people are on that scale in ways that they don't even realize.
Absolutely.
You know, or haven't quite accepted, or it's not still as accepted within our society for men to be on that scale. Whereas I think women are more quick to identify as, oh, well, I'm not all the way.
Heteroflexible.
Exactly.
Great term.
Yeah. I'm glad these conversations are happening on our shows.
Absolutely. And it further explains my attraction to Lloyd because 90% straight is my kind of guy. I don't want someone who's 100% straight.
Right. You've said that always since I've known you. And, you know, so where's Andrew, we think, on the scale? You're like 95.
I would say lower.
Like 60-40.
That's why I love him.
Everyone share your Kinsey scale number with us after this episode. I think the Kinsey scale is of 6, right?
Isn't
it like, right? Yeah. Which feels like it should be longer than that.
Right.
It should be like 10. Beverly Hills?
Yes.
Okay. Did Crystal clear the air, but it just didn't make the cut to the episode? Because she said something about, well, I tried to let Erica know that Garcelle didn't hear that, but she didn't want to listen. Maybe I missed her saying, actually saying it to Erica.
I think she did.
Okay.
I think she tried. She was saying it, but it was like in a moment of like Erica being too...
Yeah, she wasn't receiving anything at that moment. Okay, all right. Well, at least Crystal tried, because I think that would have helped clarify some things.
I do have to say, though, it annoyed me for Garcelle to pull one of the, I'm leaving, you know, because even if Garcelle didn't hear Erica say explicitly, don't repeat this, I feel like Garcelle was pushing it by bringing it up.
Yeah.
I think regardless, you don't necessarily need to be explicitly told, don't bring this intimate thing up to a whole group of women.
Yeah.
So instead of pulling a dramatic, I'm leaving, Garcelle should have had to sit in the uncomfortableness of that.
Right, right. And I think Garcelle, at the end of the day, did not mean any harm.
Right. She certainly did not mean to get the reaction she did.
Right.
But she did. And, you know, I feel like the women have said this before, and they say it in this episode too, that Garcelle does like to push and prod and then is like, well, what? Now, right. It is very similar to me to Lisa Rinna. I think Lisa Rinna does the same thing. And I do think that Lisa is a little hypocritical when she calls Garcelle out on it, because Lisa does the same thing.
100%. And that was going to bring me to my next point about Rinna. And it's, why is she extending Erica so much grace, but she didn't do that with Denise last season, Kim Richards ever, Yolanda in the past? I mean, there's been so many instances where there's been controversy or something around another housewife, and Rinna asks about it, brings it up on camera, doesn't hold back. But she seems to be really trusting in Erica's innocence or being there just for her as a friend, but we haven't always seen Rinna do that, especially with Denise last year.
Right.
You know, and it's just, like you said, it seems pretty hypocritical for her to be like, well, you know, what do you want to own in this, Garcelle? It's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be the one asking that question. If Dorit right. had asked it, it would have maybe been a little bit more acceptable, you know?
Yeah.
But I think Dorit or Kyle or anyone else would have asked it in a different way than Rinna did.
Now, do you think sort of what led to this explosion of emotions from Erica was because she knew the article was coming out?
I think she was upset about something else and Garcelle just got the brunt of it.
Yeah.
She's got a lot on her plate. Whether, you know, you believe her or not, that seems to be the big conversation. And is she right? Is she wrong? Is she lying? Is she telling the truth? Either way, she's under an immense amount of stress. And she's going to lash out at people.
Yeah. It was great. And I'm glad they included a moment of everyone getting the article in real time the next day.
Yeah.
What is it?
Erica.
Did something else come out?
Her husband.
What?
Yeah, it just came out. Like, yeah. Someone sent it to me.
It's bad. Look.
How bad? I have to read. I have to have copies.
Well, it's just too long. I can't, like, it's going to take a minute.
I mean, the article is like the rise and fall.
Because, I mean, that was a big moment, you know? It was, for us fans, you know, they're getting divorced. Oh, that's, you know, and then, for this article to come out and to read all of that.
Well, here's where it gets really tricky and it becomes a challenge to stand by Erica. And it's what Sutton brings up, you know, by the end of this episode and what we're going to see next week. You know, if Erica accepted that $20 million from Tom, not knowing where it came from and whether she knew or did not know, she is now responsible. And that's it, period. End of story. And that's where it puts everyone else in a really tricky position of being like, is Erica going to just deny, I had no idea where this money came from?
You know how people will be like, well, that tweet didn't age well.
Yeah.
It's like that montage of Erica's really expensive life, you know, did not age well.
Yeah. And that decision to accept that money from Tom, that has implications for her. And maybe that's why she lashed out at Garcelle. She knew with this coming out, people were going to start questioning her even more and wondering what she knew and what she didn't know, whether she's guilty or not guilty. And I don't know. This is a turning point now because at this point in the season, she is responsible for that money, whether she knew where it came from or not. And that's just how it works.
So I thought it was really interesting for Sutton to be the one to lead the charge in. We need to have a meeting without Erica.
Yeah.
And talk about this. Because already she's now differentiating herself from the other housewives.
Right.
I am not sure how much I want to be around my friend during this time.
Like, this is a big turning point for Sutton, I feel, where I don't know that anyone else would have asked questions like that on camera. And Sutton is sort of like, huh, a lot of things here that are raising red flags for me. And, I don't know if I necessarily want to be connected with Erica right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, to Sutton's point, there are a lot of contradictions so far in Erica's story. Then this article comes out, which really blows up her spot. Again, whether she knew or not, who's to say? We may never know. But she is now responsible for that $20 million. So with things not adding up and this new added layer, someone had to be the one to be like, hold up, guys. We need to take a look at this. Because now we're also on a show. Anything we say, anything she says to us, who knows how we could get involved in the long run. It's a really delicate situation for everyone.
Yeah.
The women are stuck between a rock and a hard place. Yeah. It's like, do they stand by their friend? Because like Erica said, once this stuff started hitting the news, she lost a lot of friends. There were people who weren't contacting her anymore. Her support system was kind of gone. She really seems to have these women on her side, as we saw when she was leaving, that most of them got up to follow her out. But on the flip side, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
One thing before we leave Beverly Hills is back in La Quinta, after Erica's left, the women have that sit-down dinner. And I just wanted to say that was the kind of conversation about race that I really enjoyed watching, actually.
Yes.
Because I think it can be super uncomfortable, and it can also be, in like the case of New York with Ramona being so combative about it, it can be exhausting. But I felt like it was really nice to even hear Kathy's, you know, this like antiquated way of talking about things, but here's why she got to that place, or yeah, how she got to that place. And then, you know, being open to receiving, that's not why it's, it's no longer why or how we talk about these things.
Yeah.
And explaining it. And I don't know, I just thought it was really good.
It was very productive.
Yes.
For everyone.
Yes.
I think all of the women got to share their point of view. Garcelle got to challenge a few of the women on, you know, specifically with Dorit talking about my kids. And, you know,
and Dorit's, I know, like, oh, that upset Dorit. But at the same time, I feel in a way Garcelle was doing her a favor.
Yeah.
Because had she not said anything, everyone else would have been thinking it. Absolutely. Fans, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jackson and I grew up together. And Michael said to me, Kathy, I don't see color. I said, well, either do we.
Mm-mm. No, no, no. I'm at the other end of the table. I'm going to stick to my cream spinach. I'm not touching this one.
Well, I've always said to them, you guys, it doesn't matter the color of the skin. And we've had a lot of people that work for us that are very multicultural. I've had a lot of Black and Hispanic and Filipino. And my kids are used to it. I mean, some of the people they've loved most in this world are dark skin. And they...
But
you know,
is the brown people only help at your house?
I remember a long time ago, Kelly Osbourne made some controversial comment where it was about immigration, and someone had said, like, you know, deport these people or something horrible. And Kelly Osbourne said, like, well, who's going to clean your toilets then? And it was like, okay, you almost got to the right point, you know,
right,
like you were almost there.
Right.
But then in your response, what you said was racist, you know, and that was many moons ago. Kelly Osbourne, I'm sure, has grown and learned much since then. But it reminded me of that conversation between Garcelle and Dorit, because, you know, it's all about how you frame it. And
right,
it's just, yeah, it can be very tricky. And in one instance, you can be saying something where you think you're being supportive and you're being like, no, I'm not racist. Look, and then you kind of just shoot yourself in the foot.
Right.
My final thought on Beverly Hills, and it's probably going to be my final thought for the rest of the season until this returns, but imagine what The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City season 2 will be like. If this is what we're dealing with Erica, there is just so much more to be had with Jen Shah.
Right, because I feel like the level of anger that Erica exhibited at the end of La Quinta is what Jen's baseline is.
Yeah, 100%. That's how Jen wakes up in the morning.
Yeah.
Rose and Thorn?
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
What was your rose?
My rose is that we finally got to hear from Paulina without Mike in the room on Shaws of Sunset, because she hasn't been around. And even at Thanksgiving when she called in, you know, Mike's there sort of leading the witness,
yeah,
a little bit. So I felt like it was nice to be able to hear from her, but then what she was saying was crazy juicy, that
I
she
know,
that, you know, she caught him lying yet again, and now she's like kicked him out.
I know, which I thought he was already living on his own, but
well, kicked him out of bed.
Right, kicked him out of her life.
Yeah.
Is it over? Like,
honestly,
is it completely over?
I can work through a lot of things, but one thing that I cannot stand for or tolerate is you speaking to other women. And he goes, Paulina, don't take it there. I already told you that would never happen again. That very next day, while he was sitting in the car, he did not know that I had access to his Instagram. And right before he walks into the house, he deletes it. And I confronted him. I had ordered food and I took his food and I threw it at him. And I go, here, you can eat alone tonight.
Oh my God.
I told him I want him out.
Alina.
I'm done.
Well, my rose is also from Shaws of Sunset, and it was Nima using Woody from Toy Story as his inspiration for the Western night. Because everyone else went edgy, you know, saloon, sex worker, you know, chic cowboy, and he sort of went like plastic toy. Yeah. It's just so Nima of him. Okay, what was your thorn?
Well, Real Housewives in New York City, we're at Black Shabbat, and Ramona just can't help herself. And that's all I'm going to say.
I think that's enough said.
Yep. What's your thorn?
Okay, my thorn is from Below Deck Med, and it is when they're returning from the crew night out, Lexi is the only one in the cab not wearing a mask. She is covering her face.
Come on, Lexi.
And it's like, if we haven't learned at this point that it's not about you, it's about others, then we haven't learned much.
Right.
Put your mask on.
We'll be back next week with an all-new episode. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me.